The Hawaii Sports Radio Network on 95.1 FM and AM 760 presents Wake Up in the Den with Kuʻule Ogbayani.
Good morning, beautiful people. It's Wake Up in the Den. I'm Kuʻule Ogbayani, and you heard the promo right there. Paul Brecht is getting set up at Sharks Weekly at the Aloha Tower Marketplace Esports Arena powered by DSE Hawaii. And coming up, we feature soccer. HBU Soccer is on deck for you guys. But don't fear. We have a special guest joining us again in studio, former University of Hawaii Manoa and Hilo basketball player Zor Ned. Good morning, Zor. Thank you for hanging out with me this morning.
Good morning. I'm glad to be back in the den 2 weeks in a row.
Woo! We are going to start to potentially make it maybe a regular thing, or I kind of mentioned to you beforehand, I was like, if I take off during the summer, then it'll just be like you and Paul hanging out and having a good time here in the den.
I know you're ready for it.
Yeah. just in a little bit, like something that Zor and I realized we could have talked about last week, but we didn't, and we'll get to on this show, is just our differing experiences being student athletes, you know, not only student athletes at local colleges here. Zor, you have experience at both the Division I and Division II level. Myself, just at Division II at Chaminade, and it sounds like we have completely different stories. Graduated both from OIA school. Shout out to the OIA, so we can talk a little bit about that. Because I was like, wow, it's been a significant amount of years since I've played in college, about 15 years ago compared to Zor, but I think it'll be interesting insight for maybe a lot of listeners and fans, or maybe potential, you know, people with their kids, or maybe young people that are listening to us or will listen to the podcast, and how we potentially navigated time management and just going through the whole college life, how it differed for you and I, considering there was no social media. I don't want to say there was no social media, but just social media wasn't as prevalent back then as it is now, compared to when, you know, just comparing the two times the point in times when we each played. So that'll be fun to look ahead at. And then coming up later in the show, we talk a lot about you being a basketball guy, but you are quite the football guy as well. And interesting tidbit about what you told me that your brother is currently doing, which is really, really cool. So we'll get to some NFL draft discussion coming up a little later in the show, and we're just going to have a good time. But just real quick, though, want to get your thoughts on I know we're quite a few days removed, but nonetheless, I want to get your opinion on the NCAA men's and women's basketball championships that we saw, with South Carolina topping off an undefeated season, Dawn Staley doing Dawn Staley things, and then UConn just being pure dominance on the men's side.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good weekend of championship basketball. I think that even from the Final Four games, the two games before, on the women's side, it was really good. It was kind of sad to see that the UConn and Iowa game kind of came down to one or two plays and a controversial call, but I like how the UConn players handled it, and they said, like, you know, it's not just one call that determines a game. There's a lot of things that they could have done better. But I was really impressed to watch the championship game on Sunday. It was a really good game. I was really impressed. It kind of looked like in the beginning that Caitlin Clark was going to kind of run away with it and run off in the sunset with the championship. But, you know, South Carolina's freshmen did a really good job of stepping up. I mean, I was really impressed to see them knock down a lot of shots. And from a person that watched the game last year, you could really tell that emphasis in recruiting was spent on people being able to make outside shots. Because, I mean, last year when South Carolina and Iowa played, you know, Caitlin Clark wasn't guarding certain players. They were sagging off a lot of players because they had such dominant post players like Aaliyah Boston. But I was really pleased to see how that game went. You know, Caitlin Clark still has a phenomenal career, and she's gonna go down as one of the greats. And I really hope. I mean, I've seen a lot of things about Indiana Fever's already getting a lot of national television, so that's only gonna be great for the game, as women's basketball on a whole, for that to continue to keep moving forward. And, you know, people that are coming into college next year, you know, they're going to only be able to move the needle even more further with the way that more attention is being put on women's sports in general. And then as far as the men's side, I thought it was, you know, it's a tale of kind of how a lot of UConn's games have gone. You know, a lot of close in the beginning, them kind of trying to feel out a team, and then they kind of put it on you with their defense, and they wear you out with those actions. I mean, Zach Edey had a really good game, but I feel like UConn just had a really good game plan against him, trying to wear him out, trying to make him guard a lot. And, you know, the big from UConn was doing a really good job of sitting on his left shoulder and making sure that he couldn't really do much, even though he had almost, I think he had like 40.
37, I believe, to be exact. Yeah.
So, I mean, but it's just been pure dominance from UConn, and I hope that, you know, they can. The tough thing about winning all those games, you got to pick up, you only get like a week, and then it's starting to recruit, and you gotta get ready for the next season. So I hope it's a story where they can potentially be in a situation where, you know, they can make a way to make a three-peat. That would be, I don't know when, I think the last time that's been done was like UCLA back in like John Wooden days. So it's been really impressive to see their dominance. But I mean, I think the college basketball is in a really good place right now because, you know, there's interesting things that are going on the men's side with like the NIL and the transfer portal, and then on the women's side you have these like big powerhouse names that are able to, you know, make a name for themselves over 2 or 3 years and then go into the WNBA draft. So I think that college sports is in a really good place. I feel like right now the women's game is a little bit ahead of the men's game, which is really refreshing to see, because for all my life, I mean, I've always been told that it's really good to watch women's basketball. So I'm glad. I hope more people start to pay attention to that and even get into WNBA, because WNBA is in a really good space where it's like right after the NBA season and it's right before football season. So I hope more people start to tune into that and not just think, you know, it's not worth watching. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think Paul Brecht and I, we speak about that like ad nauseum ever since before the NCAA tournament. Like, we've been talking about it, I want to say, since like last summer, more so talking about our team here, right? Our home team with the Rainbow Wahine basketball team. But the proof is right there in the viewership that for the first year ever, more viewers watch the women's championship compared to the men's championship by like 4 million viewers. So, and speaking of the WNBA, I mean, the draft is already next week, Monday. Caitlin Clark mentioned it. It's already back to work for them as they get ready for the season. Indiana is doing their thing with marketing their, you know, tickets. The Aces versus Fever in Las Vegas has been moved to the T-Mobile Arena. The Mercury are marketing, you know, the goat versus the rook between Diana Taurasi and Caitlin Clark. So I think that is a lot to be said, too, with the WNBA finally taking advantage of what is given to them. Because as much as it's easy to blame, you know, the general public or the viewers, I don't think the WNBA has been doing their best job at promoting their product. So it's nice and refreshing to see that that's also happening.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen the different posts on Instagram as you were speaking about, and I think that the game is just in a really good place right now, and especially with the way that social media is, and it's only ever growing, and there's more and more players that are interested in playing the game. I just think the WNBA is in a really good space. Basketball in general is in a really, really good space right now.
Yeah, and basketball has come a long way since I was playing and stuff, so that's where I kind of want to transition into what we told the listeners that we're going to talk about and just our differing experiences. So just a quick background. Some of you guys that have been listening to the show for a while already know, but in case you're new here, welcome, first of all. And so for me, I graduated from Mililani, and then I wasn't planning to play in college. I did play basketball in high school, but I wouldn't consider myself a basketball player. But I love the game, obviously. But I'm more of a soccer player by trade, I guess you can say. But just went through some stuff in high school, fell out of love with just playing sports in general. Chose to go to Chaminade because of their criminology and criminal justice program. First year I was there, no soccer at all. They did have basketball, but I was like, eh, that's okay. And then the second year I was at Chaminade, they started a soccer program. I'm like, my parents are like, maybe just go try out, you know, you might like it again. And it's like, oh, okay. And then I tried out and it was fun, but you could tell that pretty much everyone that came to try out were either never played soccer before or whatnot. And coming from somewhere like Midulani, where we're very competitive, we win all the time, it was kind of hard, right? And I'm a very competitive person. Tried out, didn't go back to tryouts. I was like, I don't know if I can play, you know, with the level of talent that was there. But the coach called me, at that time they didn't offer full scholarships, but offered me a partial, I think it was like $2,500 or something, which that is significant if you go to Chaminade. For those that know, it's the most expensive school here. And my parents were like, yeah, I mean, it's something, just go play. And I played and, you know, I fell in love with the game again, and we weren't great, but it was still nice to be able to play. But I wish I knew, and this is not a knock at Chaminade at all. I like how the new era of social media and how much it can do and help younger student athletes in this day and age, if we look at the positive, where I had no idea that there were so many different options because I was a good soccer player, but there's no way I'm going to get recruited to go play Division I and get a scholarship. Like, that just, I'm going to be real with myself, and I was not that good, right? But I wish that there was more options for that level of talent to realize, like, I can go to Division II and get a scholarship, or even Division III these days, right? And it's all about just kind of like taking care of your education and where you want to end up and be at home. So for you, Zor, you know, having experience at both, and if you guys miss Zor's quite fascinating story of his journey to the University of Hawaii at Manoa with going to the camp, were there any other, like, as you mentioned, you went to UH Manoa because of the camp, but were there other ways that you were able to look at other schools, or not only you, but maybe some of your classmates and everything? And what do you see out there that some younger athletes can take advantage of in all these opportunities using social media for good?
Yeah, I remember a lot in high school, like Coach Hernandez was my social studies teacher, and he was really known for getting a lot of guys to go play D1. So it was a little bit intimidating, like, in class when he would just, like, random, like, Notre Dame or UH, somebody would just walk through, and then some random kid would have to go and talk to them. So I would say my experience was a little bit different. I had to sign up for, on an app, like a recruiting site called, I think it was NCSA, and that was where I was starting to able to learn about the different opportunities of just, like, playing, you know, Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, all those different avenues. And I was able to learn just the ins and outs of recruiting itself. I mean, I always tell kids when they ask me about, like, how do I get recruited, you have to do a lot of research. There was a lot of things that I didn't necessarily know going into the process. I thought, you know, you see everybody on Twitter post thankful to receive an offer. And,
yeah,
you know, I learned the difference between, you know, interest versus an offer versus, like, a walk-on versus a preferred walk-on. There's a lot of different terminology that, you know, you don't learn when you're just a kid that dreams of playing Division I sports. And one of the biggest things I learned was the dead and live periods. Like, you can't talk to the coaches, aren't allowed to talk to you during certain mm-hmm. dead periods, and they're allowed to talk to you in live periods. And if you email a coach during a dead period, they can't respond to you. So there was a lot of times where I would send out all these emails to these coaches, and I didn't research until, like, I learned towards the latter parts of my recruiting process that some of the emails I've been sending out are kind of just going off into deaf ears, because they literally, it's against the rules for them to do that. So that's the advice I always give to a lot of kids, that they just need to make sure that you're doing your research on the team that you want to go to's dead and live periods, and it's different in each division. But I think that was the biggest thing, just learning about the ins and outs of the recruiting process. That was what was kind of the interesting thing for me.
Yeah. And I want to actually get back to that, seeing people post about offers and whatnot, because that's the other side of social media that can kind of hinder just more of when other kids see that and they feel discouraged, that other kids maybe that they feel are similar talent, and how that can affect any young person. So hold that thought, but we got to take a break. So we'll be right back as we are joined by former UH Manoa and Hilo basketball player Zor Ned. Don't go anywhere. This is Wake Up in the Den.
Back to more Wake Up in the Den with Ku'ule Agbayani on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760. Never had much faith
in love or miracles. Ku'ule Agbayani and Zor Ned kind of discussing our experiences as we are about 15 years apart from our playing days in college, myself playing soccer at Chaminade University of Honolulu, and Zor playing at both the UH Manoa and Hilo, most recently at Hilo. But I've been kind of wanting to get Zor's input in terms of what, because when I was playing social media, there was maybe like Facebook, Instagram was, I want to say, relatively new, but it wasn't, nobody really used it. Twitter was around, but same thing. It's not, I guess the young kids never really were on Twitter. Now they are, because that's where they see that they can interact with a lot of coaches and post their film and everything. Now there's Huddle. That's a source that a lot of young people can use as well. But we were talking about the good things about having all this information via the internet or social media and having this close access to coaches or to programs and whatnot. Whereas when I played, the process was a little more difficult. So like essentially recruits would have to almost like fly in to Hawaii to see you play, or they would need someone to film it and email it if it could have the capacity to send your film, you know, to the States to get recruited. You had to really stand out. And there were, like, for soccer, I mean, my classmate was Sarah Uro. She got recruited to play soccer at Oregon, right? Like, if you were, but I was nowhere near her level of talent. But if you, it's like only if you were that level of talent, you would get recruited, and pretty much Division II talent and below, you would only hopefully get recruited to a school here, not necessarily all the options on the continent. But yeah, being that now we're kind of in this interesting world of people wanting to really put their lives on social media and feel, you know, we're all about the like the likes and the clicks and everything. And now we start to notice where, unfortunately, some young people are just somewhat posting offers as if they got it. And then I also see where like young people are almost like leveraging offers with other schools trying to get better offers. So is that something that you've been able to talk to young people about? And if not, what is maybe some advice that you would give to navigate that?
Yeah, it's a pretty overwhelming situation, especially when you're getting a lot of interest and just kind of learning the difference in the terminology between like interest and offer and, you know, verbally committing and actually signing a piece of paper. I think that the biggest thing is making sure that your page is in the most professional way possible. Like it's presented in the most professional way possible, because these coaches, I'm a little bit different from like back when you were playing, like the coaches have the ability to just search up your name and see whatever you put out and the stuff that you tweet, the stuff that you repost. I mean, they could see everything. So I think that a lot of that just comes with like building your brand and making sure that you're as polished as possible, because as quick as they give you that offer or give you that interest, they could be uninterested in you or pull the offer, especially with the way that, you know, NIL is working out now and the transfer portal is working out now. I think that it's really important to make sure that you try and stay as professional as possible. And it doesn't just stop when you're in high school trying to get recruited, because if you go to a place like Hawaii, they drill in the fact that you guys are the professional team here and that kids look up to you. You know, media looks at everything that you post, so you can't just be posting whatever. You have to carry yourself as a professional even when you're in college. So I think that's one of the biggest things.
Yeah, and shout out to the University of Hawaii too, because they are which is a good thing, they are sticklers for grades. Like, it, you know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts, kind of turning the other way if you're that, you know, a better player. I know one of the men's volleyball players, Keone Thim, like, he had to go to, he shared with us on the Hawaii Players Pod, presented by Hawaii Pacific Health, which you guys can check out on our YouTube channel. But he shared with us how he had to, you know, go away to, like, a JUCO, even though his talent was, he could have gone to UH right away. It's just he didn't take care of his grades in high school, so you need a certain level to even be able to be on the team, and that can't change. So I think that's something that definitely doesn't get overlooked, especially at the University of Hawaii.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the big, I mean, even in high school in Hawaii, that's a big thing. I remember my coaches, they said they won't even look at you if you're on ARS or if you're close. And I have some coaches that switched it from a 2.0 that you have to have a 2.5, 2.3, because they know the importance of not just having good grades here, but having good grades at the next level.
Yeah, I was 2.5 was the Mililani standard. Like, I tell people, like, do as I say, not as I do. And I wish I did a little bit better in school. I joke, and sorry, mom and dad, that I was more of an athlete student. But I think when I went to Chaminade, I was just one of those. I like to read, and I put a lot of effort into things that I'm interested in. I'm just one of those types of students. So it's not that I can't study or whatnot. It's just like when I went to Chaminade, my criminal justice classes, it's like I aced every single one of them because it was fascinating to me, right? Where some of the math classes that you had to take, and it's like, oh my goodness, this is so boring.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing I did notice when I got to college, that like it's a lot. I jokingly say that college is a little bit easier than high school because it's straight stuff that you really want to learn about, and it's on your schedule. You get to pick whenever you get to go to class. You get to pick the days you don't want to go to class. It's very hand. You have the ability to control your learning. So I feel like it's a little bit easier to get better grades in college, just me personally, because I was doing a lot of communication stuff, and it was all things that I was really interested in.
And we are joined today by Zor Ned, former basketball player at UH Manoa and Hilo. All right, we kind of asked you about this towards the ending of the show last week, but I wanted to take some time to, you know, have at least a more than like a minute to talk about it, because we talk about social media, but as a player, especially as a player for the number one quote unquote professional team here, all the eyeballs, all the talk are always on UH Manoa. I'm sure there's like sprinkles of here and there at Hilo, but it's always on UH Manoa. So, you know, what you kind of mentioned it last week, but just to give everybody who maybe didn't hear it last week, what do you guys pay attention to as players when you see, you know, fans maybe be negative and whatnot, either on your play or on the coaching staffs and everything? How do you guys personally deal with seeing some negative comments on social media? Because you guys are active as well, so you're scrolling and things can just pop up on your feed, even though you're not necessarily following that person, right? It can just somehow pop up there. So how do you, maybe you personally, and how you've seen maybe it affects or maybe not affect, and how other teammates have dealt with the kind of scrutiny that you have playing at UHM?
Yeah, I think I feel like everybody can feel the pressure, especially when you go through a couple games where you should have won, or, you know, you're in a little bit of a funk as a team. But I think that the coaches do a really good job, especially Coach Ganai. He does a really good job of explaining to everybody that the only people that matter are the people that are in the gym, the 15 or 20 something people that are in the team as a whole, with the coaching staff and even the GAs or the managers. Because we're the ones that are there every single day putting in the work. You know, and a lot of people that view are just seeing 2 hours of a product that's 20 hours of a week. So it is difficult. You do, because you want to do good in general for the team. You want to win for the fans. And it is tough when we go through those moments of losing. But you just have to stay level-headed in the fact that it's a grind. Like, it's a July to April grind that you're in, and it's a very, very difficult thing to go through. But at the end of the day, everybody's goal is the same thing, even the players to the fans, is to win. So I think that that's the big thing. I don't think that a lot of players really harp too much on it, especially when, you know, there's those funny people that try and comment after we lost one of their bets or whatever the case may be. But I think that it's just big to stay together as a team. And for the most part, my coaches that I've had at either UH or Hilo, they've done a really good job of just keeping the main thing is winning. So,
did you guys have any type of, I mean, you guys had a really good season at UH Hilo this year, but are there social media negative ones for at the Division II level as well? Because again, like I mean, I played soccer, so it's definitely not, doesn't get as much attention as basketball does. But yeah, just have you noticed a difference between the Division I level and then going to UH Hilo with the social media, I guess, popularity and things that people say?
I wouldn't say there was many social media issues. I will say that we went through a little stretch where we weren't winning games. We kind of would win one, lose one. And we kind of felt the pressure as a team. And Coach Ayona did a really good job of kind of just saying that, like, we're about to hit our stride. You know, the season's not over. We have a whole, we got to play everybody else in conference again, and we can flip the season just by taking things one game at a time. So I think that that was more of pressure putting on our, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves because we knew that we were a pretty good team and that we had the ability to do something that teams at Hilo haven't done before. So I think that it's a little bit different from the D1 to D2 level,
mm-hmm.
but I think in general, the same thing is, the big theme is to try and win as much games as possible. Yeah.
Does it kind of feel better not having that extra excess? I would say it's excess weight of seeing the talk on social media. Did it feel a little bit better having that off of your shoulders?
I didn't really feel anything regardless of whether or not I was at UH or Hilo, because you try not to pay attention to those mm-hmm. stuff, because again, these people aren't the ones that are in this grind with you from July to April. A lot of people don't understand that it's not just, season doesn't just start in on the very first day. Like, it starts
apparently
in June when you're getting your physicals to, like, even this year when UH went to Japan, I think for their mm-hmm. tour, like that is a grind. You get 10 legit practices, and it's people don't understand the ins and outs of Division I, Division II basketball, even Division III basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know apparently the all that matters, right, is 40 minutes of that's all anybody sees. And hey, they're fans, I get it. But I thought that was important for you to really explain, like, there's so much more that goes on. And I'm just throwing it out there that some of your guys' comments do get screenshotted and shared amongst the group chat, and everyone laughs at you. So when you put that negativity out into the universe. All right. When we come back, we are going to switch gears because, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, Zor is obviously a basketball guy, but he also is very much a football guy as well. He is actually rocking a Philadelphia Eagles sweater as we speak, with a hint of some Jacksonville Jaguars on his shorts, which we will tell you why exactly when we come back on Wake Up in the Den.
Wake Up in the Den with Kuule Ogbayani on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760.
Welcome back to all of you, the beautifulest of all the beautiful people. It's Wake Up in the Den. Kuule Ogbayani joined today for, one last segment that he will join us on. Zor Ned, former University of Hawaii basketball player at both UH Manoa and Hilo. But we are going to switch gears a little bit and get into some NFL talk. We didn't get into it last time, and we want to talk about NFL today, because now that, you know, the basketball chapter has officially closed with the NCAA tournament, well, I guess college basketball, we're heading into NBA playoffs next week, but we'll talk about that another time. NFL draft is just around the corner at the end of this month. Let's go. And before, real quick, let's just explain your Philadelphia Eagles fandom, but at the same time, why you're wearing Jacksonville Jaguars shorts.
Yeah, so I was born in Philadelphia, and before we moved out here to Hawaii, so my whole family on my dad's side is diehard Eagles fans, diehard Sixers, Phillies, everything Philadelphia is what they rock. But my brother, he works in the NFL, but he works for the Jaguars as a photographer. So he's like the head of photography. So he gave me these Jacksonville Jaguars shorts and I'm rocking them, but I'm a diehard Eagles fan. Every Sunday, my alarm's for 6:50 to watch the 7 o'clock game or daylight savings, 7:50. I got Sunday ticket. I got everything. Every week on Sunday, it's a good week if the Eagles win and the Cowboys lose.
You fit right in. Our Darnell Arsenal is a huge Eagles fan as well. But I talked to him about it a little bit. How was it for you watching the interesting season that was for the Philadelphia Eagles? You know, they were just coming off of being in the Super Bowl, but then last season is just didn't reach what everyone thought they would. Jalen Hurts never really was healthy, in my opinion, was kind of the knock. But what was your takeaway from the season last year?
Yeah, it was a very tough stretch. They had a really tough schedule, especially they played the Dolphins, the Cowboys, the Niners, the Bills, but they and the Chiefs. And I think they did a really good job at the first stretch of that. But as soon as they started to lose, I think that they made a little bit of a quick decision to switch the defensive coordinator, and that kind of messed things up. But I mean, anytime that you lose two coordinators, like in a championship season or a season where you go to the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. it's very difficult to sustain success. And I'm really surprised that they even started off as good as they were. But a lot of games that they were in, they were winning really close, ugly games that they probably should have lost. So it was, I mean, from the outside looking in, like, you could tell that the downfall was coming, but I was really hoping that they'd be able to stop the bleeding a little bit just to make it through the playoffs. And obviously not having Jalen Hurts at 100% towards the end of the season, not having A.J. Brown was very tough. And, you know, the defense was not as good as they were the year before, but I'm glad that they were able to kind of rebuild and get back some pieces. And hopefully within the draft, they can pick up some key players to... They really need to fix their secondary and their linebacking core a little bit. But I feel like this year, especially with getting Saquon Barkley and adding a couple mm-hmm. more pieces, they're going to be in a really good place, especially with the way that their schedule looks. We just got word that they're playing against the Packers in Brazil week
That's
one.
Right.
So I'm really excited to see how Saquon Barkley is going to be used this year. I hope that he has kind of a rebirth that Christian McCaffrey have with the 49ers, because I know that Christian McCaffrey had a lot of injuries towards the end of his stint at with the Panthers, and you know, he kind of seamlessly made a great transition with the 49ers, and it's going to be really good to see Saquon behind that line. I'm thankful we don't got to play him two times in the yeah. year, so I'm really excited for the next year.
Revenge tour for Saquon Barkley, hopefully.
Yes, definitely.
And the good thing is for the Eagles, you guys have, you know, a solid quarterback, right? Something that not a lot of teams can say, including my team, the Chicago Bears. But fortunately, the light at the end of the tunnel is here with Caleb Williams, projected to be, albeit the number one overall pick by the Chicago Bears via Carolina. But now taking a look at some of the latest mock drafts, at least via The Athletic, because there's tons of mock drafts everywhere you can look. But this one intrigued me just because in this one, they have four quarterbacks going with the top four picks. So Caleb Williams to the Bears, Drake May to the Commanders, the Patriots selecting LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels, and then the Minnesota Vikings trading up with Arizona to draft J.J. McCarthy, the quarterback out of Michigan. Now, this would be the projected trade. Minnesota trades number 11, number 23, and a 2025 first-round pick to Arizona for that number four pick. And then the Falcons from Los Angeles Chargers would move up to draft Ohio State wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr., which somehow I'm praying to the football gods that the Bears figure out a way to trade up so they can get Marvin Harrison Jr., because Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison would be my dream scenario. But what is your thoughts? One, about Caleb Williams, you think that is the right choice for the Bears to take him at number one, and seeing all these other quarterbacks? I mean, we know the Commanders and the Patriots do need quarterbacks, right? But being that, I mean, we could see four quarterbacks go. What are kind of some of your thoughts on that?
And that would be kind of amazing to see four quarterbacks go back to back like that. I don't think we've seen that in a while. But as far as Caleb Williams, I think he's a really good quarterback. It's unfortunate that he didn't really get to finish his career at USC. The the way that he should have, just, you know, making it to a bowl game, making it to in the championship game, because he's one of the best quarterbacks in the last 4 or 5 years. But I'm really glad that the Bears have, you can see in this offseason, they're trying to surround him with weapons, especially, I don't really think they did a good job with that with Justin Fields, but I think they're learning from their mistakes and they're finding, I mean, this is a generational type of quarterback, and you're putting him with, from day one, week one, you're putting him around Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, mm-hmm. DeAndre Swift. This is a really loaded offense, and they've always had a pretty good defense from what I've heard. So I think he's going to land on his feet pretty well. I think he may have a good rookie year, just kind of like how CJ Stroud had last year. So I'm hoping that he can really put the naysayers to bed and just, you know, whoever has something to say about his nails or the way he dresses, you could put that to bed and just get focused on playing football, because I think he's a really good football player.
I'd be almost like more intimidated if a quarterback is like not even afraid to rock the pink. Like, it's just proving that he doesn't care what you say. He's going to go out there and ball.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he's a really good quarterback.
Have you kind of looked down the line? Now the Eagles have the 22nd overall pick in this year's NFL draft. Any players out there that you are kind of hoping that the Eagles take?
From a nostalgic standpoint, it'll probably be in the second round, but I heard Jeremiah Trotter Jr. is up for this draft, and he might come land to us in the second round, but I think that would be a great thing to have a father-son, kind of like similar to how the Steelers had the Porter father-son situation. Mm-hmm. I think that would be really cool to see, but I just really hope that they get a cornerback or somebody in the linebacker core, because we need corners and we need linebackers. But I wouldn't be upset if we got a third receiver, because, you know, somebody in the slot, somebody quick. I think there is a lot of talks about us possibly getting somebody. I think that one of the guys from Texas, I'm not sure of his name, but whatever they do, I know that Howie's up to something, and I know that he's going to either trade up or trade down, and we'll have a really good offseason.
Actually, as I scroll down for this mock draft, I don't know where it says that this is, again, Athletic mock draft, that they would trade it to New Orleans, or did they move up? Anywho, but I know you got to go in just a little bit, so I don't know, last thing for you. 49ers are the projected favorite to win the Super Bowl, followed closely behind the Chiefs, you know, rematch, what we could say, of last year. But what are, taking your Philadelphia Eagles fandom out of it, who do you think is going to be the best team next season?
I think that the Texans will be up there. I think they had a really good year last year. The Ravens, of course, they reloaded with, I mean, they have basically the same team, and they got a monster in Derrick Henry. But I think that the teams that you've said, I feel like the top five will probably be around, you know, I'm going to put the Eagles at first, but
yeah.
Eagles, Chiefs, the 49ers, the Ravens, and the Texans. I think those are the five teams that I have as the top teams going into the next year.
Killing me, Zor. You're not going to believe in my Bears after you were just saying that. It looks like
I feel like the Bears can make the playoffs, but it's going to take a lot. That's a really tough division. I don't know how the Lions, they might have a slump after the great year that they had, and, you know, especially playing a number one schedule, and the Packers are always going to be relevant. So it's going to be tough for the Bears, but I believe in the Bears. It's going to be a 2-year project, and I think that they're going to land on their feet.
Sounds good, but I know you got to head out of here, but thank you so much for taking the time to join us and talk story today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so we'll be right back to close it out on Wake Up in the Den.
Rise up, warrior, and be strong, warrior.
Wake Up in the Den with Kuhle Ogbayani on the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760.
Stay strong.
Welcome back to Wake Up in the Den. Kuhle Ogbayani holding it down for the final stretch of this morning's Wake Up in the Den. Paul Brecht is just about ready with Michael Lescaro to bring you Sharks Weekly at the Aloha Tower Marketplace camp, or HPU's Aloha Tower Marketplace campus in the eSports Arena powered by DSE Hawaii. So stick around following this show to learn more about HPU Athletics and specifically the soccer program. Mahalo again to former UH Manoa and Hilo basketball player Zor Ned for joining me for majority of the show today. We will likely have him on quite often, you know. If you guys missed some of the episodes, he joined me last week Thursday, so you can always go and listen to that on demand at HawaiiSportsRadio.com or wherever you get your podcast. So good insight. I loved kind of sharing our stories with, you know, just such a huge gap between him and playing sports in college nowadays versus when I was playing about 15 years ago or so. So, but want to transition a little bit as it's a big weekend coming up this Saturday. And that song leads us right into the closeout topic, UFC 300 featuring, well, we're going to say it's featuring the title or the BMF title on the line between Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje. Max is actually the underdog right now, but this is, they had their media days yesterday. So this is what Max Holloway had to say, or just some of the clips from yesterday's media day with Max.
Justin Gaethje, right? Obviously a phenomenal fighter, BMF. When this fight was announced, I saw the reaction where someone was like, oh, he hits too hard for Max. You know, a guy who's never been dropped before in the octagon. When you see those comments and people apparently being concerned for you and about your career after this fight, do you just think, okay, well, we'll see on Saturday?
We find out. You know, that's the beautiful thing. Every time I do any of these interviews, go watch it all fight week. Every time they ask me, what is the main thing? What is, when you come to think of Justin, what do you think of this fight? I think of violence and this happens. You know, I smile. You know, I smile. This is what Real Fighters is about. Justin's a BMF. The beautiful thing is everybody has questions, and that we have the answers come UFC 300 Saturday night.
I've been watching your YouTube channel. Great content on there. I recommend everyone go watch it. You've been showing yourself bulking up for this fight a bit more than you did for that Dustin fight. How do you feel now walking around ready for a lightweight title fight?
Brother, I mean, it is what it is. You know, I talked about this earlier today. I hate talking about it, but, you know, that Dustin fight was... It is what it is, you know. My manager is calling me Muffin Top Max this whole camp, you know. So at the end of the day, that's what it was, you know, for this fight. And we wanted to put on the right weight. We wanted to be smart. We wanted to be strong, but we still wanted to be fast. So I think we found a very even ground, and you guys get to see come Saturday night.
There was a quote from your coach on one of your video blogs where he said, Max already has a BMF belt and it's in his chest. Do you think, comparing your skills to Gaethje's, that this could come down to whose heart is bigger, and do you think you beat him in that category?
We see what happens, you know. We see what happens. I think a true BMF is a guy who, you know, who's willing to fight and go in there like gladiator days, you know, and he said it before. If he was, like I said, when I'm a gladiator, he said in gladiator, he would have fight to the death, you know, in a coliseum. So the beautiful thing is we get to find out, man. We get to find out. Attrition is going to be a big thing in this sport, I believe, in this fight with him, and we get to find out.
Max, we're here. Just one last quick one on the jump up to lightweight. Was that a conscious decision after the Dustin fight, like coming off of that? Like, if I ever go back up to lightweight, I have to approach this differently, or was that just a change right now for the Dustin?
I mean, the Dustin fight, I hate talking about it. I hate saying it. They came with an opportunity, and opportunities like that, you do not say no, you know? It was just a time thing. With the Dustin one, I think it was like 6 weeks or whatever, and if you count down the 2 weeks that you kind of come down from training week, that's like a 4 week, you know what I mean? So at the end of the day, Real Fighters stay ready, like I always said, and I felt like I was ready. If you go watch that Dustin fight, there's a couple of things that I had to change, and you know, the outcome is different, you know what I mean? And now we had 10, 11 weeks, I don't know what it is for this fight. You guys get to see the difference, you know? A lot of people like looking in the past, a lot of people like searching for stuff. They keep forgetting what's right in front of them, you know, and you guys are going to see come Saturday night.
Justin has obviously famously declared himself the most exciting fighter in the UFC. I'm curious, do you agree with that, or do you kind of put yourself above that?
I mean, how are you going to disagree with him? The guy had, 12 fights in the UFC, 12 bonuses? Brother, that speaks for itself. It is what it is. I'm just excited to be sharing the octagon with him come UFC 300 on a big event like this. When you got a card like this, the spotlight like this on us, being the people main event already, you know, I think we can still show the UFC pushing pushing. Every time I see an ad on UFC for UFC 200, it's me and Justin. So at the end of the day, Tim, Daniel, someone needs to get on the phone with Dana and Hunter, and we're going to talk numbers about some things because it's looking kind of funny.
And Justin said that I think the ideal scenario for him would be doctor stoppage because he doesn't really want to put you out cold because he has respect for you. So I'm curious, what do you think of that prediction?
I mean, it's cool, you know, it's cool. I don't want to put the man out cold either, but it's the fight game. That's what we love, you know. Like I said, for 25 minutes, I'm going to go in there. He's going to come for my neck. I'm going to come for his neck. And, you know, after we can hug it out, you know, go get a beer. I mean, I don't drink beer. He can get his beer. Maybe I get a shot with him and, you know, we get a pizza or something. A lot of people is forgetting who Max Bless Holloway was. They need a reminder. UFC 300 was the time, and you guys are about to see a whole different animal, you know?
Max, so I saw on your Instagram you built the Max Holloway Fitness Center and the Why Not Clubhouse for the Boys and Girls Club. I mean, obviously, as a guy who's been very impacted by martial arts, what did it mean to you personally to be able to give back to your community at that level?
It meant a lot. You know, I mean, being able to give back to my community at the One Night Boys and Girls Club was huge. I always wanted to do something for my community, so it meant a lot. They also gave me the health and fitness ambassador of the Boys and Girls Club, so that was huge. But to be able to have that little gym spot in there, to have kids train safe and be smart and do the right decision, you know. Like when we went open, I told the kids, a lot of them is scrappy already, you know. So hopefully we can grab that energy, grab all the energy and put it in the right direction, you know. Hopefully 5, 10 years, 15 years, some kid from that gym that started that gym or even just touched and trained in that gym might be sitting in front of you one day, and that would be a mission complete.
You fought here in Ninth Island many different times, but this occasion, right? Where does this occasion rank amongst all the times you fought here in Ninth Island, given the magnitude of the event?
Oh, this is huge, bro. This is huge. This is the hugest. This is UFC 300. What more can I ask for? Like I said, every time we fight in Hawaii, you guys, every time we fight in Las Vegas, the Ninth Island, you guys see all the Hawaiian flags. You know what I mean? And being UFC 300, being this big, being on a card like this, being on a history card, it's going to be huge. You guys are going to see a Hawaiian flag swarm that damn arena like always. And I'm just blessed to be a part of this.
And that was Hawaii's Max Holloway answering questions from the media during their little media day yesterday. Again, fighting on the card for the BMF title against Justin Gaethje. Now, Max is the plus 142 underdog to Justin Gaethje, moving up in weight. That's something important to note. You heard during that little clip there that they brought up the Dustin Poirier fight quite a bit because that was the last time that Max moved up in weight to lightweight. Usually he fights at the featherweight level. And yeah, that fight against Dustin, I did say it way back then. It was almost like a shock for Max, not saying that he can't handle going up in weight, because if you guys have seen him in person, like, he does not walk around like anything close to that featherweight 145 level, right? He's clearly close to 200 pounds when you see him, like, during the off season, and it's a fit, like, almost, you know, upper ones to 200 pounds. But I think this is kind of like a better weight with him. You heard him say that they trained better this time around. He needed to take that opportunity somewhat last minute against Dustin Poirier. And I think it was the power as well that he wasn't used to with fighting Poirier. And Poirier is a solid fighter for you guys that don't watch the UFC very much or keep up with MMA, and so is Justin Gaethje. So this is going to be a very exciting fight, in my opinion, and I haven't been excited about some of these UFC cards recently. I think that, you know, they kind of lost a little bit of a luster for their stars. You heard Max say as well, like, a lot of the promos have centered around this BMF title, which isn't necessarily a quote-unquote real title. It's just the baddest, yada yada yada, that's what it stands for. But these two gentlemen are like the epitome of exciting fights, and I think that's what is going to make it so great. You know, some of the previous fights between for the BMF have been Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier and Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal. So this one is, I'm looking forward to. Max is still very much into his fighting career. Doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime soon, and like how he always says, we'll see how it goes to make the next decision, because he was asked quite a few times about, you know, should this go well? Is he going to stay at lightweight, and how is that going to go? And he just, you know, we'll see how it goes. But Justin Gaethje, to his credit, he's won, Max said it, like 12 fights and 12 fight awards, that being fight of the night. He won like fight of the year actually recently. So he won it against the decision he had against Michael Chandler back in 2021. So the guy always puts up exciting fights, and I'm looking forward to this one. But obviously, we're always going to cheer for our home guy in Max Holloway. So that card the main card is this Saturday, 4 o'clock p.m. Hawaii time, fighting out in Las Vegas at the T-Mobile Arena. And unfortunately, you can only watch it on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. So that's kind of the bummer, considering this is like only one fight on this main card that I'm looking forward to. But if you're an MMA fan, it's filled with quite exciting stuff, even throughout the prelims. You can watch that on ESPN or ESPN Plus. But we got to go. Stick around for Sharks Weekly. I'm Kule Agbayani. Mahalo for listening. Bye.